Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrent Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lauthe, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrent Studies. The NY Deterrent Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, as always, we have a great guest. You know, we've never had this guest before, so it's good to finally get him on. I know none of you are probably very interested, but I'll bore you for the next 30 minutes. Of course, I'm talking about General Tom Boussier, the commander of Air Force Global Strike Command. So this little trick there. I know you are interested in hearing from him and hearing what he's got to say. So, Tom, welcome to NucleCast.
Thanks, Adam. Sorry it took so long to get on board.
Well, I mean, there's been a little bit going on the last few years. It's been exciting times as of late. So thanks for making the time. I know you've been traveling and busy, so thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as the commander of Global Strike Command, you've got a lot on your plate. And one of the big things that you have a strong hand in, of course, is our modernization effort. And so there's been a lot going on lately with the many modernization programs that are currently underway. It's the busiest time since the Cold War for modernization. You know, most of, you know, like Kansas City Plant here where I live, Kansas City National Security Campus, has more programs going on than they've ever had. And so for you, you've got a ton on your plate. Can you tell us about the modernization programs and where they are and sort of how you see them moving along?
Yeah. So, Adam, I guess I will kind of reinforce that your opening statement about how busy, you know, the Department of Defense, the Department of the Air Force, and Air Force Global Strike Command is in the recapitalization of the nuclear triad. I'm sure most of your listeners that are akin to the nuke enterprise understand that we're really in the second major recapitalization of the triad, right? So post-World War II and kind of the outfitting of what we know today as the triad under General LeMay and Strategic Air Command. Really, the first recapitalization was in the 1980s under the President Reagan kind of era. And here we are in the 2020s going into the 2030s and really recapitalizing everything in the nuclear triad. And so not unique to the Department of the Air Force. Obviously, the Department of Defense is overseeing the recap for all three legs. But Air Force Global Strike Command, as you well know better than most, has the privilege of maintaining two-thirds of our nation's nuclear triad, the land leg and the air leg, and roughly 68 to 70% of the new command and control and communication elements. We're recapitalizing every element at the same time. And if that wasn't challenging enough, a unique nuance of the nuke enterprise that, again, I would venture to say most of your listeners understand the unique aspects of the nuclear enterprise is we have to maintain full operational capability while Absolutely. We transition from Minuteman III to Sentinel, while we transition from B-52H to B-52J, while we transition from the B-1 and the B-2 to the B-21, while we transition from the UH-1 November helicopter to the MH-139 helicopter, while we transition from the B-61 series to the -12 and 13, while we transition from the ALCOM to the LRSO, while we transition our facilities that support and enable the nuclear enterprise, both the land leg and the air leg, day in and day out, while we build up our force to be able to account for that transition, every aspect of the nuke enterprise while we recapitalize has to maintain full operation capability in the transition. It's a massive undertaking for just one element, let alone all elements at the same time. So that is a testament to our airmen that perform in this most important mission every day and day out in Air Force Global Strike Command. So we can delve into any one of those aspects that I kind of gave that overview, Adam. But over to you on which element you want to kind of focus on.
So I think, you know, probably we should start with Sentinel. I mean, this has been the sort of the challenge thus far. You know, LRSO seems to be on track. B-21 seems to be on track. You know, we have good news, of course. We have lots of good news. But then we also have, you know, the Sentinel, the actual missile itself seems to be doing well. It's on track. It's, of course, the infrastructure that was sort of, we didn't quite understand exactly what it was going to take to, you know, to make that happen. Can you maybe talk about Sentinel and where we are and sort of how we're addressing those challenges?
Yeah, so I think most folks are tracking the non-McCurdy process that the Department of Defense went through with the oversight committees on the Hill in Congress. So basically, January to July of last year through that process, there are different segments or elements of the Sentinel weapon system. To your point, there's the air vehicle, so the missile itself with the components on the ICBM. There's the command and control kind of segment, which is all the infrastructure, the launch facilities, the control facilities, the infrastructure that intertwines those facilities and capabilities across the fabric of five different states in our three missile wings. There's the elements of our support equipment that supports the movement and sustainment of those capabilities across those three missile wings. And what was revealed in the non-McCurdy process was the primary elements and the cost growth within the launch facilities and the launch control centers, and understanding the design for that and understanding the impacts across the fabric of the department, across the fabric of the nation, with the increased cost of construction materials and labor. It's just exacerbated by the sheer scope and scale of the Sentinel weapon system, as you talk about three missile wings, 450 launch facilities that have to be replaced, as well as the command and control architecture for that. We've witnessed the increased cost growth across the fabric of different areas in the department and the nation, but it was just a significant impact to the Sentinel weapon system, specifically because of the cost of concrete, steel, labor, as it relates to outfitting those. What Nunn-McCurdy gave the department the opportunity to do is really do a restructuring of the Sentinel weapon system. And basically one of the major pieces of that was revealed in the restructure was the original requirement many years ago, over a decade ago, the department decided that it would be more cost effective and quicker to reuse the launch facility holes, when in reality the construction methodologies that are resonant in 2025 and on, and then the ability to not have to assess each one of the 450 launch facilities per se for strength, agility of that facility to maintain another multiple decades. So that really broke out the ability to do a bunch of things in the program at our three missile wings that we're seeing increased opportunities for speed and cost saving. So we're really excited about that. The other thing from the Sentinel weapon system that has been maturing over the last year and a half or 2 years is a close partnership between the Nuke Weapons Center and their senior officer responsible for the Minuteman III to Sentinel weapon transition system, and then our senior officer and Major General Connor, who is kind of the operational lead for the command between Minuteman III and the Sentinel weapon system. So the partnership of the acquisition professionals, the operational experts, coupled with the engineering and acquisition team in AFMC, as well as the industry partners in the prime and the subs, is really starting to see some great benefit of that teaming and bringing everyone together under the new construct of the post Namakurdi as the department looks forward to accelerating that capability, as well as coming up with new and innovative ideas of how to save time and money. So again, very encouraged so far. We're far from done on the department's approach to how to optimize and speed the fielding of Sentinel. One thing that we have kind of all settled on in agreement is the absolute national security imperative of fielding this capability for our nation. So that hasn't really been a debate as we've gone forward in this process.
So just for clarification for our listeners, is it accurate to say that we are in fact going to require, to dig and build new silos? Or is that, because there's been discussion in that, the last many folks have heard is that we can't reuse, that we will in fact have to build new silos.
I think it'll be a hybrid, Adam. So
a hybrid.
Yeah. I don't think we haven't declared, the final solution yet. From an operational command perspective, I've looked at two of the three missile wings and looked at the proposed, both the acquisition professionals as well as the operational professionals' recommendation on how to optimize the current or potential future launch facility footprint for the command. We have one more wing to analyze, and we are anticipating that'll be done by the end of the calendar year. And then we have to present that to the secretary and OSD's leadership before it gets finally approved. But we have very encouraged with the team's progress, very encouraged with their aggressive work to get this right. So I think what you're probably going to see in the end is a combination of some holes will be able to be reused, some will be new. Some will be, preponderance will be on the footprint we already have. And then there's other, opportunities within the federal or non-federal, footprints that we'll pursue with our, local, state and federal partners.
And then some folks have said, hey, this is a great opportunity to go mobile. Has there been any discussion at all of having any component that is mobile?
So that, Adam, that is always a question that's come up. It's actually a requirement to review in the whether it was 10 years ago or a year ago. There's a Department of Defense requirement to look at alternatives, and so the decision has been made. It's been reviewed, and the decision been made to go with a fixed force with a laydown similar to what we have right now with our fixed launch facilities. The decision of whether or not that, as you well know, and I'm positive your listeners know, this business in our Air Force, this business in our Department of Defense is mandated by the president. The land leg of the triad is the most regulated and oversighted leg of the triad. I have a binder on my desk with 11 years of statute codified in law that regulates the land leg of the triad. The decision to have a triad, by my math, we're on the 13th straight administration, political party agnostic, that has studied and directed our nation to have a triad for our national security needs, as well as those of our allies and partners, that we have a formal and informal agreement to provide extended deterrence umbrella to. I can tell you at least twice in the last 10 years, if not more, at least to my knowledge, at least twice, the department's reviewed and done an analysis of the various different modalities of providing the land leg, and the decisions have been made to do what we're doing now.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
So how about, let's shift a little bit and start talking B-21. Where are we there? How are, for those who may not know, what is our bed down going to look like? and what is it going to take to, you know, shift those bases from the, you know, B1 or B2 or whatever they're flying to B21? And then finally, do you think we'll expand the buy beyond the initial 100?
Yeah, very, very happy with where the B-21 program is right now, Adam. Very happy with where the testing program is. I think most of your listeners are aware that we have T-1 is the designation of our first test article out at Edwards doing developmental test. Very happy with the progress of that program. I publicly acknowledged a few weeks ago in an interview that T2 will be flying shortly, and that'll be the second developmental test aircraft that will be joining the developmental test team out at Edwards to continue that progress. The exact number of B-21s on the production line is still classified, although I'm very happy with the progress of that. And then I think most of your listeners are aware that Congress I don't know what the proper term is, but the reconciliation bill that Congress put out had dollars specifically directed toward the B-21 program to ramp up the production capabilities for that platform because of its kind of its urgency for national security. Very happy with the congressional oversight of that program also. The program of record today is at least 100 B-21s. That 100 B-21s will replace the B-1 and the B-2 weapon systems. The main operating bases in order will be Ellsworth Air Force Base, the 28th Bomb Wing at Rapid City, South Dakota. The second main operating base will replace the B-2s at the 509th Bomb Wing, and our classic associate wing is the 131st Bomb Wing at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. And then the third bed down will be to replace the B-1s down at Dyess at Abilene, Texas, in the 7th Bomb Wing. That's kind of the flow. There is decision space right now in the department of whether or not we need to change our original retirement plans for the B-1 and the B-2 as we field the B-21, just to keep our capacity for long-range strike at the appropriate level. We've made proposals to the department that has not been decided, but the flow will remain the same between South Dakota, Missouri, and Texas on the flow of the B-21s. There's great concern on the Hill, there's great concern in the Department of Defense, there's great concern in the Department of the Air Force, there's great concern in Air Force Global Strike Command, is what is the capacity in the department for conventional long-range strike? That's a reasonable question that several folks have asked. I believe the department will make a determination of what the right number of B-21 is. Is it 100? You know, prior chiefs of staffs of the Air Force have articulated the right numbers, 145. I know General Cotton and other combatant commands in this past congressional cycle went on record saying they are advocating for 145 versus 100. Here's what I'm confident in, is the department will make the right decision for what the nation needs. As a reminder, it's a nuanced fact I'd like to tell listeners at every opportunity, is Air Force Global Strike Command is the only force in the free world. It's the only command in the Department of Defense that has bombers and ICBMs. None of our allies and partners have bombers and ICBMs. We provide that capability and capacity, either, like I said, either through treaty or informal security agreements, to provide capability and capacity either for strategic deterrence umbrella or conventional long-range strike. We are in demand greater now than I've seen in the last 20 plus years for conventional long range strike. So very happy with where the B-21 program is going. And I think the department will make the right decision on what the right number of conventional and dual docked B-21s the nation needs.
So oftentimes we don't really talk much about LRSO, but sort of LRSO is such a critical capability. Can you maybe tell us where we are there as well, and sort of what you know, what we're looking at in terms of how many we'll bring to bear and when those will be fielded to replace the Alcum.
Yeah. So again, I think you mentioned it up front, very happy with the progress of the LRSO weapon system, and happy with where NNSA is on the physics package that will be resident within the LRSO. So obviously a marriage between NNSA, Department of Energy, as well as the Department of Defense and Department of the Air Force, as we build this capability and marry up the warhead with the cruise missile. Happy where the testing is. Happy with the facilities upgrades that we're doing on our bases to receive that weapon. Because I can't remember, Adam, the exact, I believe the number is classified. I won't give you the exact number because off the top of my head, I don't believe it's unclassified. But venture to say we are fielding enough LRSOs to meet STRATCOM and the nation's strategic deterrence needs, as well as meet our periodic annual flight testing requirements for the missile itself, like we do right now with the Alcum and the Minuteman III, as well as our B-61 series. We have a very deliberate flight test profile to make sure we understand the dynamics of each weapon system across the fabric of the land leg and the air leg. And so we have accounted for that in the program of record. But again, very happy with the progress of that weapon system as it's being developed and to be fielded.
Now, I know it's always sort of hard to talk in much detail about that fourth leg of the triad, yeah. NC3. We've got new classification guide in it, so we can't say all that much. But is there anything you sort of want to pass on to the listeners about our efforts to modernize the NC3 system?
Yeah, I guess what I would say to the collective team of listeners, because I'm sure there will be, you know, practitioners that will listen to this forum. There'll be industry partners. There will be, you know, Department of Defense professionals that come across this discussion. So obviously NC3, new command and control and communications, are the underpinning and foundation of our ability to deter, right? So you can have the most capable systems in all three legs of the triad, but our real underpinning of deterrence is the ability to command and control those forces from the president to the tactical level forces 24/7, 365 in a permissive or stressed environment. That's the underpinning and the credibility of our deterrence forces' ability to command and control it. So as we look at recapitalizing, you know, the sea leg, the air leg, our weapon systems, we also have to be very cognizant that we have to recapitalize our NC3 architecture, right? So it's capabilities, it's capacities that transcend radios or facilities, fixed or mobile, aerial or terrestrial or subterrestrial. It's a kind of a microcosm and fabric of capabilities that have to be stitched together. And as we transition from all our different capabilities and capacities across all three legs of the triad, we are also transitioning incrementally over time elements of our NC3 architecture from, I would say, legacy to new, I'd say analog to digital, I'd say capabilities that are new and capabilities that are just modernized. That is, if you want to take everything that we just talked about as being complicated, then you underpin our modernization and recapitalization of NC3 at a time when you have to maintain connectivity of the force while you do that. It's a very complex and complicated endeavor. And it's going to take, quite frankly, everybody that has a play in that, all the industry partners, our different program offices, our operators and maintainers that facilitate these capabilities. It has to be very deliberate and disciplined as we transition each one of those capabilities in NC3. We are so much better now than we were 15 years ago. We are so much better now than we were 10 years ago. We are so much better now than we were 5 years ago. But there's still a lot of work within the department to make sure we get this right. I mean, it's foundational to our credible deterrence force And whether that's STRATCOM, OSD, Department of the Air Force, Department of the Navy, industry partners, Global Strike Command, AFMC, or all the other elements that play a piece in our ability to command and control, everyone has to be on deck on this and to make sure we get it right. It is a complex endeavor.
Yeah, for sure. Now, before we invite Bob the Genie onto the show, I wanted to ask if you could maybe give us a little insight into the recent operation in Iran. I know our listeners are excited about that.
Here's what I'll tell you, Adam. You know, we're going to, you know, tell that story publicly to the extent we can here shortly. We have a very deliberate game plan to be able to tell that story. But let me tell you a couple things about Operation Midnight Hammer. It was executed flawlessly. Our airmen made it look easy. You and I know it wasn't. But across the fabric of Air Force Global Strike Command, the 509th Bomb Wing, the 131st Bomb Wing, our partners in AFSCN, our partners in STRATCOM, our partners in the department writ large that had a play in making this successful. If you take the scope and scale of that operation and you back it up, you know, not unlike most military operations, our airmen train and plan constantly for being able to execute when tasked. As most of people understand that we've looked at problem sets across the fabric of the globe consistently, but the manner in which our airmen generated and then executed when directed is eye-watering and inspiring. And I will tell you, if there's one person that's more proud of what our airmen did in that operation, I'd love to meet him.
Yeah. It was something to behold for sure. All right, so it's that time where we bring out Bob the Genie. So as I rub my magic lamp, of course, Bob grants all guests 3 wishes so long as they're related to the topics we've been discussing. So with that, General Bussier, what is your first wish?
All right, so I guess no particular order, but here are 3 wishes. Wish number 1 is that we maintain consistent year-to-year financial support for the Nuke Enterprise across the fabric of our leaders in Congress, across the fabric of the Department of Defense, across the fabric of the Department of the Air Force, that the urgency and need of recapitalizing the 2 legs of the triad that we have the privilege of being part of, that funding is intended and consistent across the fabric of the years, because it's going to take many years for us to recapitalize at the speed and pace required by the threat. So that's kind of wish number 1. Wish number 2 is that we maintain a deep understanding in the Department of Defense on the purpose and value of what we provide to the nation. So within the Department of Defense, right? So the number of folks in this business, as you know, are very small, right? And I'm a little bit biased in this next statement, is that it's supported by NPR and statements by our leadership in the department, but this is the most important business we do in the Department of Defense. Maintaining a viable, credible, reliable nuclear triad underpins everything, absolutely underpins everything in the Department of Defense. It enables every regional combatant commander's scheme of maneuver. It is a silent underpinning of everything. And so within the Department of Defense, I really want to propagate that level of understanding, because the number of folks that are deeply experienced in the Nuke Enterprise is not that many. So that's kind of my wish number two. And wish number three is aligned with wish number two, is we have an obligation in my mind to educate and articulate to the American public what we do for them every day. They are paying for our salaries. They're paying for our weapon systems. They have a deep-seated expectation that we protect them and their way of life and their families every day, which we do. But we have an obligation to explain to them what we do for them every day. It's not a well-understood thing across the fabric. So I feel obligated to make sure we educate not only inside the department, but outside the department on what the nuclear triad does for our nation. When everyone says the word nuclear, it gets scary, right? But it underpins everything in our nation's defense. It underpins everything in the Department of Defense's scheme and maneuver. It provides that level of defense for all our allies and partners that rely on that capability and capacity from the U.S. And I think it's an important aspect that we need to do in the years ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that you don't see enough of. And I think a handful of years ago, Keith Payne did an analysis where they looked at all the articles written on nuclear topics. And it was about seven sort of articles opposing it, saying, get rid of it. It's outdated. We don't need it, for every one that said, here's what it does and why we have it and why we need it. And I think that's stayed fairly similar over time. And so we have a tendency, and then sort of the understanding of how we actually do things and why is really quite poor. It's poor among the quote unquote expert community, and it's poor, you know, among the broader populace. So that sort of need to get out there and say, hey, here's what we do. Here's how we protect you. I couldn't agree with you more. It's critical. So as we sort of wrap up the show, is there kind of any sort of elevator speech that you would have for our listeners that you want them to remember 6 months or a year from now as they think on sort of broader nuclear issues? What do you want them to take away and remember?
So what I would ask the listeners to remember is, as we have a discussion on budgets, as we have a discussion on the need for X, Y, or Z in our nation, while we debate many things in our personal life or professional life or in the national sphere, don't ever forget that we have airmen in Air Force Global Strike Command standing the watch, defending our way of life like they have for many, many decades. So thank an airman, thank their families, and thank the Department of Defense for providing that blanket of security like we do every day and day out. It's a silent force that doesn't really get a whole lot of recognition sometimes, but they're there every day like they have been for decades, providing that blanket of security for our nation, our closest allies and partners. Thank an airman.
All right. With that, General Tom Bussier, Commander of Air Force Global Strike Command, thanks for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
Absolutely, Adam. My pleasure.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you next time. Well, great discussion. It's always good to talk to General Bussier. You know, he's kind of a funny guy and, you know, always good to chat with. Hopefully his update on the modernization programs was informative. You know, there's a lot going on, and you know, we're having to really ramp up for all of the things we're doing. And so, you know, in the modern day and age, it's not as easy as we might think. So it's good to hear from General Bussier, and glad to see things are by and large moving forward at the needed pace.
Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the AMLA Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lowther, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The AMLA Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening, and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.